This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back at some basics,
consistency in what we're doing.
Guys getting more bang than breathe, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
This is the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the show, we're going to review the NC State game. We're going to take a little bit of time to look ahead to this weekend's top 10 tilt between Florida State and Miami. And we're going to talk about this huge Florida State recruiting weekend with NOLDigest.com publisher and recruiting guru Jeff Vogt. So let's go ahead and move on to segment one, where we will review the NC State game. Okay, first we're going to take a look back at the NC State game. Wait, hold on. I believe Florida State just scored again. Well, in this game, we learned that this Florida State team is not one of the FSU teams of the past that might have a trap game letdown after a huge win against a team like Clemson and before a big game against a rival like Miami. Instead, this team came in with a very business-like approach and had one of the most dominant wins. According to ESPN, they had one of the most dominant wins over the last 10 years. Actually, there's a formula ESPN put up the other day that talked about how, you know, the formula basically attaches a percentage chance of winning to any point in a game for a team. And basically, because of how quickly Florida State jumped on NC State, this game had the second highest average of win probability of any game over the past 10 years. That just displays how dominant this win was against an NC State team that actually beat Florida State last year on the road in Raleigh. So, I mean, you're looking at a big difference between last year coming in and getting a little bit of a trap game at night on the road, and this year coming in and just absolutely putting the game away within the first 5 minutes of the first quarter. Maybe the most remarkable stat in this game was that the starting offense for Florida State averaged 9.24 yards per play, while the starting defense only gave up 2.3 yards per play. So in other words, the starting offense averaged just under four times the output per play that NC State's offense averaged against the first team defense, which is suffice it to say, it's fairly unusual to see that kind of disparity among two FCS teams, let alone two teams from the same conference. This game was over from the start, and this team showed a lot about its character in the way that it approached this game, to just put a team away right away, go for the throat. Start out with a very high level of efficiency, and then just basically coast from there. Now, I'm of the view that Jimbo Fisher, there's some controversy among Florida State fans who, you know, felt that Jimbo made the wrong call by pulling the starters so early in this game. He only let the offense go one series after the half and then immediately put in the backups. And actually the backup defense, or the starting defense, didn't play a snap in the second half. And you did see NC State has some success against Florida State's second team and second and third team guys. I mean, they were down to third team and some walk-ons by the end of this game, but basically, you know, they did have some success against Florida State's backups and scored some points and narrowed the gap. I mean, they won the second half. NC State actually won the second half 17-7 against Florida State's twos and threes, which, you know, made the score look, if you're just looking at the final score, made the score look maybe not as dominant, certainly not as dominant as that 35-0 first quarter was for Florida State. But I think that actually, if anything, you know, the concern has been that, you know, this didn't show the kind of dominance that you need for the style points for the BCS. But to be honest, I think Fisher made completely the right choice here, because frankly, the style points really do not matter for Florida State. The BCS computers don't see anything but wins and losses ever since 2004, ever since the formula was changed in 2004. All they see is it's basically either a one or a zero. You win or you lose, and they just are algorithms that determine who has more impressive wins or losses based on strength of schedule, who else has beaten, who else. It's basically extended transitive property without considering anything other than the final outcome of the game, which is a serious problem, but, you know, that's another situation altogether. But, and then, of course, you know, the human voters, yes, they, you know, the criticism is, of course, that Florida State needed more style points to move up further, to maybe pass Oregon with the human voters. But, you know, to be honest, that's just not going to happen. Human voters, as a rule, don't move teams down, and they think of it as moving teams down rather than moving teams up. They don't move teams down unless they lose or give some good reason to think that team should be moved down. And so with Alabama and Oregon starting ahead of Florida State in the preseason, the fact is that if those two teams win out, they're going to wind up in the national championship game. No matter how many style points Florida State gets, no matter how bad the final score against NC State would be, Florida State is not going to get in over an undefeated Alabama or an undefeated Oregon. Florida State simply has to wait for one of those teams to lose in order to be in the top two long term. The other thing is that, you know, if you are looking for style points, beating up further on NC State is not going to be that. If anything, you're going to get criticized for running up the score by leaving your starters in too late, and people are going to talk about how you're trying to get style points. If anything, the way that this last week of coverage has gone for FSU and the media, where people talked about how Florida State, you know, jumped on NC State and was so dominant early that they didn't even play their starters in the second half, has been more of a media plus for Florida State than it would have been had they won this game 77-3 by leaving their starters in for 3.5 quarters. And the other side to this is that, you know, I think the main reason that Fisher did this was right. You want to, at this point in the year, you know, I think a lot of people don't appreciate how beat up football teams are this late in the year. You simply do not have the legs that you did early in the season. I mean, you tend to feel heavy. You feel just a little bit sluggish. Your legs get tired a little bit earlier. And so, you know, one of the things that I think Fisher wanted to do here is basically give his guys the opportunity to get off their legs, to keep their legs fresher, because the legs late in the season are so key. It's you have to be fresh, in part because when you're tired, when your legs are tired, that's when you get hurt. That's when you have knee injuries. That's when you have more injuries. When you start getting tired, when you start leaning instead of using your legs, when your running form or your cutting form gets a little bit sloppy because your body, your proprioception is just not what it was when you were fresh. So, I mean, this is one of those situations where, you know, just imagine if FSU had left its starters out there and suddenly you have a Kelvin Benjamin or a Rashad Green or a Jameis Winston or one of the starting offensive linemen go down with injury, then obviously everybody would be criticizing that decision. So I think this was the right decision with one final thing that, you know, frankly, you want to dominate Miami. It's not going to matter very much if you beat NC State by 60, but if you beat Miami by a lot, that's a top 7 team, at least according to the polls. I think they're more like a top 15 team, but, you know, that's a legitimate team, and dominating that team, blowing that team out, and I can promise you that Fisher is not going to pull his starters, even if they are up by 35 at the half. He's not going to pull his starters at the beginning of the third quarter. He'll let them play a little longer against Miami because of how much more that win would mean. I just think this is really a non-issue. But either way, I mean, looking ahead to the BCS, we had an article up on Noel Digest this week that sort of broke down the BCS looking forward. And the main takeaways of what we talked about are that, you know, again, Alabama and Oregon are going to the national championship if they win out. That's as simple as that. Ever since the BCS formula was changed in 2004, the top two teams in the polls have always gone to the national championship. It was changed simply because the top two teams in the polls in 2004 did not go to the national, or I'm sorry, 2003 did not go to the national championship, and there was some feeling among those humans who had voted other teams ahead that the computers had screwed things up. So essentially, they wanted to keep the computers in for sort of political reasons and a sense that that they would add some objectivity while taking away their real impact on the actual formula. They're only one third of the formula, so unless a team has really really poor computer ratings relative to the other team that would be there, the top two teams in the polls are simply going to go to the national championship. Now, the other takeaway here, though, is that looking ahead at schedules, and once we actually start weighting likelihood of winning each game, Oregon is not likely to win out. Bama's about 50-50. Oregon's probably closer to about 17-20% in terms of their likelihood to win out. Now, if they beat Stanford at Stanford this next week, then that jumps to like 35% or 40%. But again, they're still not likely to win out. And Florida State is probably around a little above 50-50. They may well be the most likely of that group to wind up undefeated. So if you're a Florida State fan, you simply have to wait for all the chips to fall where they will, and the likelihood of both Alabama and Oregon winning out for the rest of the season is actually relatively low. And frankly, you just, if you're Florida State, if you're on that coaching staff, if you're one of those players, you have to remind yourself and you have to remind your teammates, you have to remind the players under you, if you're the coaching staff, that the only thing that really matters is making sure that you win out. Because, I mean, even with Florida State's remaining schedule, it's by no means a gimme that this Florida State team winds up undefeated. It's just simply very difficult to win all your games. You have to come out and play so well each week that the margins between wins and losses are actually so small in college football that it's pretty difficult. You have to make sure that you are that you're focused on what you do. And again, I think Florida State's the most likely to wind up unbeaten of that group. And right now, I think they've got better chances than I think a lot of people think that to wind up. More likely to wind up, I think, in the national title game than Oregon is, even though Oregon, if they win out, will be in that national title game. So anyway, the important thing for Florida State ultimately is just to win the next game in front of them and keep winning that next game, which, you know, again, we're going to look ahead at this next game in the next segment as we look ahead to the Miami game this weekend. Looking ahead to the Miami game this weekend, Miami is simply they are not in the same class as Florida State this year, and there's no reason to expect this game ultimately to be all that competitive, to be honest. We feel very similarly about this game to how we did about the Clemson game. Now, in this case, Las Vegas happens to agree, that those men in the desert happen to agree with our analysis of this game, as they have Florida State favored by 22 at last check. And you know, quite frankly, I think that's right about right. This Florida State team is significantly better than this Miami team. I don't think that this Miami team is as good as Clemson. I've had the opportunity to talk to some players who've played against both teams so far this year, and those players have been fairly adamant that Clemson is a significantly better team than Miami. They made some comments that Miami, when they got on the field with Miami, Miami was a bit smaller than they expected. And Clemson was more physical, that they had a little bit better personnel out in the field, and were able to match up better than Miami was physically with what they felt. Now, at the same time, even though Clemson might be a better team than Miami, we do feel that Miami matches up in terms of X's and O's better with what FSU wants to do than what Clemson does. I mean, this Florida State defense, as we've talked about all season, is built to stop what Clemson does. I mean, I think it's one of the best spread stopping defenses over the past few years in college football, with the defensive backs and linebackers and defensive line that they've got. This Florida State team is really, they are almost the ideal type of a spread stopping defense. I mean, they are built to stop that stuff. But Miami is they're not a Clemson that has to run the spread. I mean, Clemson, that's what they do, and it plays right into Florida State's defense's hands. Miami can go big. They've got three pretty good tight ends. They've got a huge offensive line. They've got running backs who can really run. They're not big, but they can run between the tackles. This is a team that, you know, Miami's bread and butter is that inside zone, that 14-15 zone. You know, they love actually to run it on the weak side. They run 14-15 weak as a big bread and butter play for them. And that plays right into what Florida State really hasn't defended quite as well this year as they have compared to the spread. So, you know, this is where Miami, you know, what they're able to do and what they want to do is going to match up a little better, at least with what Florida State does defensively. I'm not persuaded that Miami's defensive backs, especially at the safety position, can handle Florida State's wide receivers. But you know, if I'm Miami, I drop 7-8 guys into coverage every play and just try to get hands and arms into passing lanes and try to create turnovers and tipped balls and things like that, and force Florida State to go down the field in chunks, in smaller chunks, and not let Florida State throw it over the top, and basically play very soft zones and force Jameis Winston in that offense to execute down the field and then take my chances inside the red zone. I think that, again, Miami has the personnel to be able to do that in the way that their linebackers hit and they can run, and even though they're not as strong in the secondary, in particular in man-to-man coverage, you know, if you're going cover three or cover four and you're just making sure that those guys stay deeper than the deepest, then, you know, Miami has a chance to slow this game down. And, you know, just as long as they tackle well in space, and they've done that, that's one thing that Miami has done very well this year. I think really the biggest reason that Miami is 7-0 so far this year is because they've tackled so well. It's a very good tackling Miami team. They don't give up a whole lot of big plays. They don't give up, they don't beat themselves on defense. They want you to have to execute down the field, and then they're going to take their chances in the red zone, and they're going to try to create turnovers by forcing you to out execute them and by, you know, tackling so securely in space. And, you know, honestly, that is that's a good recipe. That's the one thing, like I said, that if you're going to defend this Florida State offense with the weapons that they have, I think that's what you have to do. Now, the downside for Miami is that, again, they're not especially big on defense. They don't have especially big linebackers. They're, you know, Denzel Perryman is he's a really, really good backer, but, you know, he's a smaller guy. I mean, these guys are not that big, and they will get engulfed a little bit against Florida State size. The thing that Florida State is able to do, that if Miami chooses to play this defensively like I think they should and like I think they will, with that, you know, dropping 7 or 8 guys and really playing with that soft zone, then Florida State's going to try to, you know, they're going to be patient. They'll run the football all game. And this Florida State team can run the football when they want to. They're going to run their inside zone, their outside zone being Florida State's bread and butter play. They'll run that outside zone. They'll run some power. They'll do whatever they can to run that football against those soft fronts and force Miami to try to bring that extra guy up to stop the run. And then at that point, they'll try to throw over the top or throw, you know, a little bit more aggressively. And that's what Florida State, with its balance so far this year, really, that's what they have to make it so difficult for a team, even like Miami, that does present the ability to, you know, to tackle in space and to, you know, limit big plays against Florida State, against their receivers and against their tight end and these sorts of things. They match up better against those things than most. But again, the question is, can they stop the running game well enough to avoid from just getting run out of the stadium? And I really think that you're going to see a lot of rushing yards from Florida State in this game, that, you know, you may see some later passing yards, you know, some stuff from Jameis Winston in this game. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's not quite as spectacular a statistical game for Winston in this game as what you might expect, because I do think that Miami's going to try to limit that. So far this year, defensive coordinators have tried to blitz Winston a lot and have taken the philosophy of, well, we're going to make the redshirt freshman beat us. Well, so far, that's not proven to be a very intelligent way of attacking the Florida State offense, as Winston has relished that and has thoroughly beaten those teams by having one of the best seasons against the blitz of any quarterback in recent memory. So, you know, again, you've got to not blitz so much. You've got to sit back and really it's, you know, so counterintuitive for so many defensive coordinators who grew up, you know, basically embracing this philosophy of stop the run and run the football as the keys to winning. You know, that you want to stop the team, stop the run of the opposing offense as a central part of what you do. That's not what you have to do against this Florida State team. You want to limit their big playability. You want to limit what they're doing in the passing game, and you want them to run. You want to force them to run because, you know, then at least you have a chance once things tighten up in the red zone to maybe create a turnover, maybe force a field goal rather than getting a touchdown. And, you know, maybe you can force a fumble or something like that. Maybe there's a holding penalty, anything like that. You're trying to force them to go down the field with smaller chunks and great execution. Whereas Florida State, they should be happy to go ahead and just take the running game in this against that kind of approach. And that's what I'm curious to see is exactly how that's going to go, how patient Winston is against that kind of approach to take the run option that Fisher will give him as he goes to the line of scrimmage. Is he going to be patient when he sees that deep safety shell, when he sees that soft zone, when he sees that they're short in the box? Is he going to be patient enough to go ahead and check to the run and basically let Florida State's running backs win this game? I would expect, based on what I've seen so far, that shouldn't be a problem. But I do think that's one of the more interesting questions coming into this game. The other thing is that I'm interested in is, given the way that Miami does tend to go with bigger personnel. I mean, they can go jumbo personnel, and if I were Miami, I'd try. You know, I'd start out with a 21 personnel or with maybe a too tight look, you know, that sort of thing a little bit more in this game. You know, that nice too tight two receiver look that they could have to try to keep Florida State with more traditional base 4-3, 3-4 type looks in there, rather than letting them go to the 3-3-5 personnel that they seem to have been much, much better in. They have been much better in. You know, if I'm Miami, I want them to try to have to put bigger personnel packages on the field on defense and see how well they're able to stop the run against Miami's big offensive line. You know, can they stop Duke Johnson? Can they stop the Miami running attack in between the tackles with that bigger package? So, you know, that's what I would do if I were Miami. And I'm curious to see how Florida State chooses to defend those more traditional, bigger personnel packages. We haven't seen anybody do that to Florida State in the last couple of weeks. I mean, Maryland and Clemson both try, you know, they run the spread set. They're going to basically load up to let Florida State do that 3-3-5 or 3-3-2-6 defensive personnel. And, you know, Miami's going to be more like what Pittsburgh did. You know, they're going to try to get you into that 3-4 or 4-3 front. And I'm curious to see how Florida State responds to that in this game, because there have definitely been some changes as Pruitt has experimented and has gotten more comfortable with the personnel that he has. You know, are we going to see that 5-2 type look, that 5-2 oaky front that Pruitt showed against Pittsburgh and early in the year against these bigger sets? Are we going to see, you know, them slide Christian Jones back inside to try to keep more size on the field against that kind of thing? I mean, he was not nearly as good a player inside. Or if they go to those types of sets, are they going to have him on the outside and then bring in Terrence Smith to pair along with Telvin Smith? I mean, how exactly Florida State chooses to defend Miami's bigger personnel packages in this one is going to be, I think, maybe the most interesting thing to see in this game, because it will tell how Florida State, and by and large, it's going to tell how Florida State is going to defend both Florida, and then if they end up playing a team like an Alabama in a bowl game or in a national title game, then that will tell a lot about how they would end up defending those teams that are, again, they're inside zone heavy teams. They'll run some power. They've got the big offensive lines, and they're going to run with more traditional 21 type personnel and, you know, two tights, these sorts of things, to basically put you out on the field and force you to win at the point of attack. And if Florida State's defense has had a weakness so far, it's been that it's inside linebacker. Telvin Smith, Terrence Smith, and also when Christian Jones was in there, those backers have not been as comfortable on that inside. I mean, Telvin Smith and Terrence Smith are not that big. They're a bit light in the butt. They're not comfortable taking on offensive linemen head up and sometimes tend to run around blocks, and that creates seams. And if you've got a guy like a Duke Johnson, you get that seam and he may take it to the house. So, you know, that's what you're hoping for if you're Miami, is to force those guys to take on your offensive guards head up, to force those guys to take on a big fullback head up and to close down that hole. And you're hoping that maybe he tries to run around the block. Maybe he doesn't take the block on head on. And maybe you can get a little bit of that seam and make a big play out of the running game. So, you know, I'm very curious to see how Florida State lines up in this game, whether they go primarily with an even or an odd front, you know, whether they do more of what we saw at the beginning of the year. I mean, how much we see guys like Dan Hicks in this game, you know, who they liked on the field early in the year against some of the bigger packages, or whether, you know, they try to defend this a little bit differently than they did early in the year. One thing I do think that Florida State has significantly improved upon so far this year, as the year has gone on, that isn't a result of, you know, having a different personnel package on the field, is I do think that their defensive tackles, and I'll lump, you know, somebody like Eddie Goldman among those tackles, I think that those tackles, your Jernigans, your Goldmans, your McDaniels, and those guys, Niall Lawrence, Stample, McAllister, these guys, what they've done is they've done a much better job occupying blockers on the inside to protect the linebackers and taking on blocks. So when they have a two-gap responsibility, they're not getting too much penetration and allowing a seam to develop by not necessarily taking care of their man or meeting their man head up. So they've done a better job occupying blockers on the inside. And if they're able to do that, you know, the defensive tackles can mitigate the impact of having a bit undersized linebackers against a bigger team, because you just can't get your linemen to that second level to take advantage of that. In which case, those linebackers, their speed and their length, actually help you. Because a guy like Duke Johnson, you know, he's not a big guy, and you do want a guy, you do want linebackers that can run well enough to meet him where he's going to be, to catch him where he's going to be. So I do think that that's another thing for Florida State fans to look at. So a few things on defense, you know, sort of summing it all up, looking at how Florida State defends things, whether they go primarily even or odd on the front, where the personnel is, what kind of personnel groupings they're using against Miami's bigger packages, and also paying attention to how the defensive tackles and inside linebackers play against that kind of inside running attack, whether the defensive tackles continue to have success preventing offensive linemen from getting to that second level, from getting a hold of those linebackers, and whether those linebackers are able to take on blocks and actually close down seams rather than giving up a seam here or there by trying to run around blocks. That's what I think the educated viewer of this game is going to really be looking at and paying attention to. And I can assure you that that's something that that people like Muschamp and his staff at Miami, or I mean at Florida, are definitely going to be paying a lot of attention to in this particular game. So ultimately, I think Florida State should win this one going away, largely because I just don't think that Miami can stop Florida State's offense well enough to keep themselves in the ball game. But, you know, it is a rivalry game. You know, if they can limit the number of possessions, if they can cut the game in about a third by running the football and doing a good job tackling in the open field and shorten this game, then it could be a lot closer than people expect. I'm just not quite sure they're going to be as successful doing that, given the athletic disadvantages that they have across the board, and especially thinking about Winston as the sort of wild card that Florida State holds in this one, and that they've held in every game so far this year. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and move on to the third segment, when we'll talk to Jeff Vogt, the NoleDigest.com publisher and recruiting guru. Joining us on the program again is Jeff Vogt, NoleDigest.com publisher and recruiting guru. And actually, that recruiting bit should be more interesting this week than maybe the game will be. And actually, quite frankly, can you remember a weekend nationwide with more talent coming in to one particular game than to this one with Florida State and Miami.
Well, you'd have to look at a couple of the LSU-Alabama games from the last couple of years, 2010, 2011. Those were huge recruiting weekends for the home team. Certainly this weekend at Florida State is right there with those. And the best of the Jimbo Fisher era in terms of official and unofficial visitors coming to town. It definitely makes up for a bit of a slow start in Florida State's 2013 home schedule. Been a little bit weak. Couple cupcakes to open up. I mean, and basically Florida State's gotten the kids who are committed and the local type kids to come to town this weekend, drawing from a much bigger area, you know, beginning with at least 8 official visitors, which those guys we can count on for the most part being in town. And it's a very interesting group that they have.
Yeah. So who are some of the highlighter, the headliners, the highlights for this weekend? And what do you actually see in terms of the likelihood of some of these guys not just visiting to see a top 10 matchup, but actually, you know, sticking in Tallahassee or, you know, maybe a kid that actually is more interested in Miami in this matchup?
Yeah, I've kind of looked up and down the list to see that there's not a lot of those types due to kind of where Tallahassee is and where Miami is strong recruiting wise. I don't see a lot of kids coming to watch Miami this week, and I believe they're all in town to watch Florida State. I believe the way Florida State has played, everybody is in play. And so, I mean, we look at the defensive backs this weekend. We're talking 4 of the top 8 in the country at corner going to be in town. 3 of them on official visits, Tony Brown, Arian Springs, Marlon Humphrey coming in on an unofficial visit. Loaded weekend in the secondary. Jalen Ramsey stepping right in and playing. LaMarcus Joyner leaving. Terrence Brooks leaving. Some open playing time. I mean, I think if Florida State would land one of those guys, that would be terrific. If they could possibly land 2 of them, you're talking about really shoring up the secondary very quickly, not to mention some of the kids they already have committed. So that's one area that I expect to see. How does Florida State play it when they have those 4, you know, those 4 guys in town at the same time? Do you play one off of another? Do you say, listen, we get 2 of you. Look what's going to happen here. There's a lot of possibilities there. Another intriguing kid that's in town would be running back Joe Mixon. Obviously a take based off talent, coming a long way from California to Tallahassee this weekend. This is Florida State's shot. There is no chance to land him unless he leaves Tallahassee thinking that he's going to Florida State because of the distance and some of those factors. If Florida State could recruit themselves into that position, it would be very likely to see him again down the road in January.
So you've seen some film on Mixon. What do you actually expect in terms of, you know, what does he bring to the table? I haven't actually seen his film just yet.
Yeah, I do not think he's as good as our 3 in South Florida this year, although he's rated pretty much the same. He's a bigger type back, has good feet, seems to have good vision. I definitely think he's a starting caliber player at a school like Florida State going forward, and a bigger type than somebody like Ryan Green, even a Mario Pender, who they've kept have kept weight off of so far. Perhaps not going to be as big as I would project, you know, somebody like Jonathan Vickers to be down the road. So I think he's a nice combination of a bunch of things. Nothing to me. I mean, I've heard the talk of the explosiveness and quickness and all. That didn't really jump out to me on film, but again, I'm pretty much watching it blind. I don't know what level he plays at in California. I don't know who any of those kids are on the field. It's a very different situation for me than in Florida, where I kind of know, you know, who you're doing it against, so to speak. Regardless, it seems like he could go pretty much wherever he wanted. I'll take the college coach's, you know, opinion on that, that he's that type of a back. Florida State needs a big-time running back. We all know this. Dalvin Cook is trending up. We'll see if this kid enters the picture a little bit this weekend as well.
Yeah, some of those defensive backs, I know that there's some skepticism with people like Humphrey in particular coming out of Alabama. You know, anytime you're looking at a guy out of Alabama, or you could say Texas as well, I mean, it's really hard to pull those guys because of the in-state schools there and the level of pressure that those guys have to go to those places. You look at a Humphrey. I mean, his father being, you know, Bobby Humphrey, the legend at Alabama. You know, there's going to be some definite pressure on the kid from around there. Although I think, you know, I think a lot of people who didn't grow up with dads who played college football, I think a lot of those people don't really understand that there actually isn't the same level of you really need to go to my school from most dads like that than that you would have with fans. Fans are much more likely to want their kid to go to the school, but you know, I would figure a guy like Humphrey, Bobby Humphrey, would you know, sort of just want his kid to go wherever he's most comfortable. Now, of course, that's most likely to be Bama because the kid's grown up around Bama. But you know, what are FSU's odds really with some of these elite defensive backs? Because I'm actually of the view, you know, you and I've talked about this before. If you have elite defensive tackles and you have elite defensive backs, in particular, if you have elite corners, if you have defensive tackles and corners, then your defense is going to be elite pretty easily. Because that's where you win games to me, is in that interior area and then being able to single cover guys to give flexibility to every other player on the defense. So, you know, in terms of the odds, I mean, you've talked about if you get one or two of these six visitors at defensive back, you've got, you know, an elite class coming in. What are some of the guys that you think are actually more likely here to potentially you know, see what they the possible playing time and so on. Who do you think FSU may actually land here?
Well, I think Marlon Humphrey is the best option in terms of FSU chances of all of them. I think the chatter has been trending upwards. He goes to Clemson when Florida State comes to town. Clemson tried to play it out that he was there to see them. I know that's not true. He was there to watch Florida State, so this is the second time for him to watch Florida State this year. The track program, you know, it just – there are factors that are in Florida State's favor there. I believe he has a girlfriend who is attending Florida State or is going to attend Florida State. There's something there to that. 2 years ago, we watched Barry Sanders' son not sign with Oklahoma State, sign with Stanford. And he could have obviously went to Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's not Alabama. I understand that, but that happens. So in terms of him not being able to go to Alabama, in terms of his father getting in the way, I agree with you on that. That's not going to happen. If he feels that Florida State's the best place to go, I think the kid will sign with Florida State. And I would say, because I tend to be a little more negative than most, we're still at a 35 to 40% chance there with Marlon Humphrey, which is reasonably high.
Arian for a Springs, kid out of Alabama, yes, that's very high.
Yes, yes. But that's how much chatter and stuff there is kind of going on behind the scenes that makes you believe it's possible. Also, Jalen Tabor, who was also one of the nation's top corners, defensive backs, most consider him going to Alabama in this signing class. So, you know, maybe it's not such a big loss for Alabama. They're going to do just fine at defensive back at the end of the day. Tony Brown, Arian Springs, you know, these are shots in the dark like they are with Joe Mixon. But you bring them in, you see what happens. Hopefully the atmosphere and some of those things, Eastern football, Southeastern football, whatever you want to call this type of a game, appeals to them to want to play their football in that neck of the woods. A couple, of course, unofficial visitors are a little more difficult to talk about because they are not actually in town until they are in town. And it's very easy to say, I'm coming to the game. It's much more difficult to actually arrive at the game. Don't forget, they're all playing games tonight, high school football games tonight, which some are going to go well, some are not going to go well. Districts are being decided essentially tonight all across the state of Florida. So these are big games that are going on. But somebody like Chad Mavity, if he came into town, that would be a clear indication of where Florida State stands for him. And he may be as important as any prospect who would come to town this weekend for Florida State. Florida State does have an official visitor in Corey Thomas that I think is a little bit intriguing. He's a 6'4", 6'5", defensive tackle. Defensive end type, who may be a Cam Irving type, you know, at the end of the day. He's also from Alabama, but does not have Alabama on him, does not have Auburn recruiting him all that hard. Tennessee's kind of his leader. You know, he kind of has that next tier of offers. But when I watch the film and I see some of Cam Irving in him, same general, neck of the woods. You know, he is coming in on official. I think he would jump on a Florida State offer this weekend. He's the type of kid who tends to maybe be the one who commits here at the end of the weekend because, A, he's going to take it. And, B, I think he's going to pass the look test by all indications. He's, you know, 6'4.5", 6'5", long, athletic. I believe he comes from a little smaller school competition. But he'll be an interesting one to watch this weekend as well.
Yeah, I tend to be one of those who thinks that, you know, if you really want to see where guys are going to go, one of the first things that I want to look at is where they unofficialed. You know, official visits are nice, and, you know, guys will official to lots of different places. I mean, look at how many guys are going to want to official to Oregon just because of the facilities and, you know, the general atmosphere up there. I mean, and that's how they get guys up there is, you know, they want to, you know, get guys who take the official and then maybe get hooked because of it. But to me, you watch a kid that's, you know, that goes to places on an unofficial visit, and he's got real interest in that place generally. Unless, you know, sometimes you'll get a guy that'll go to, you know, there are a couple guys at the Clemson Florida State game who I think had more interest in Florida State than they did Clemson. But either way, I think that unofficial thing, you know, you get a guy like a Mavity there for an unofficial. I think that's a big deal. I think that signals that guy probably signs with Florida State. One of the guys that's on the possible unofficial list that I'm looking at that I think is a real possibility, I guess I'm more optimistic than many, and I think it's just the Winston effect in my mind, is Malachi Dupree from Louisiana. And, you know, it's one of those, far be it from us to suggest Florida State's ever going to get a guy out of Louisiana, but, you know, Travis Miner and Warrick Dunn and some of these guys in FSU's heyday did come from Louisiana. And you got to wonder with you look at the way that this kid has been buzzing about Winston and so on, and him being a receiver, you got to wonder whether or not, you know, if that kid makes it, I think that's got to tip the scales for a guy like that, you know, where some of these guys they show up for an unofficial, and it matters a lot, I think, in terms of, you know, your mantra of watch what they do rather than what they say. And you know, I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that or on any particular unofficials other than, say, Mavity that may be coming.
Yeah, I have a clear opinion on Malachi Dupree, and it's very, very difficult to pull out of there. Back in the era that you're talking about with pulling some of the kids to Florida State out of Louisiana, Miami's doing the same thing with Reggie Wayne and Ed Reed, and, you know, the list goes on. The third program that's actually doing it at that point in time is Michigan. People forget how much Louisiana talent used to go to Michigan for some reason, just like they used to pull a lot from the state of Florida for their skill position talents. They also had success there. Recently, only Saban and Alabama have had any success going in there, especially after a kid like Dupree coming out of the state. Now, if Winston was a true freshman and Dupree could have 2 years for sure to play with him, you know what? I'm on board probably with thinking that he would have to be stupid not to come to Florida State. I mean, that would just be the way it is. With only 1 year of Winston, I'm not sure with the local pressure, with some of that, if it's going to be allowed to happen. I mean, we can't forget Jamarie Rasko, who the FSU staff felt very good about, you know, all the way up until, you know, 3-4 days before signing day, when it became clear that they were not going to land. They did a good job with him. Now, we can cite the other examples. Anyway, point being on all this, it's a very difficult pull. His unofficial visit, should he show up in town, will be a first step to making it possible. And we'll kind of go from there. There's no doubt he's number one on the board in terms of what Florida State wants at that spot, period. End of story.
Yeah, he is a Jimbo-style receiver if I've ever seen one. There's no doubt about that.
And I'm looking at, you know, all of the commits are going to be in town in terms of some other unofficials. Travis Rudolph would be a big unofficial should he show up. Most feel that Florida is still in the lead there, but another unofficial from him after coming up at the end of summer. You know, things would start trending a little bit in FSU's direction. And, of course, loaded 2015, 2016. I mean, a lot of the big-time kids are coming. It's impossible to know. And some of them could commit. Does it matter? No, it doesn't. You know, it's just a long way to go there. And we've seen the game has changed. These kids will throw out these early commitments a little bit easier. Regardless, a strong performance will set the table for those classes in the future.
Yeah, you got to wonder. One other guy, actually, that I keep seeing his name come up. I just got to ask you about in terms of that. I've seen him on the unofficial visitor list, the possible unofficial visitor list posted up on the Noel Digest Premium board. Is Anthony Moten? And I'm actually curious because I remember a Moten that played for Michigan State years ago. He's an offensive lineman. Ended up playing, I think, for the Chargers. Is this his son? Is this a guy that with an NFL dad, or is this just the same last name, or do you not know what
I do not know, but I've never heard that, and I think that I would have given all the NFL kids that do play there. Now, he's an interesting story because kind of heading into, you know, after their junior seasons in the state, you had Kerry Clark, Trey Valentine, DeMarcus Christmas, 1, 2, 3 defensive tackles in the state. You could really put them in any order that you wanted to put them in. And each have changed their stock a little bit over time. Moten was kind of the number four guy in the state. He's having a great senior season. He might be having the best senior season of all of those guys and has really stepped up his game. Was committed to Florida, appears done with them. Everybody thought he would just flip to Miami. That has not quite happened. Miami's in the lead. Florida State's in this one, clearly. And we'll see what happens this weekend. Would not shock me if he did commit to Florida State this weekend. He's kind of that type of a guy with some of his with the way he's handled recruitment. South Carolina's the other program to keep an eye on here. They've done a good job, and they've kind of been there the whole way through with him. And obviously they're having some defensive success as well. They're selling the early playing time, yada, yada, yada. But definitely a kid I think Florida State should want in their class at this point. Because he's finally playing up to, you know, the potential that he has here in the state. It drops off a cliff after him in the state. You know, you go from four, he's a legit four-star type player. I mean, you really go down to low three-star type guys in the state of Florida after those big four. Florida State already has one in DeMarcus Christmas.
Yeah, Moten's, when I saw him a little bit over the, you know, in terms of some tape over the summer, I was very impressed with his ceiling. And felt like he may actually have the highest ceiling of those guys. Maybe Christmas a little bit higher, but right around the same level with Christmas. So it'll be interesting again to see where he ends up. And he is definitely a guy that I think fits the kind of system that Florida State wants to play up front.
It's an odd situation because it's an odd situation because Kerry Clark, I watched him as a freshman at Hialeah American. I mean, grown-ass man. I mean, amazing, amazing talent. He's done very little with it over the last 2+ years. I mean, he's allowed these other guys to come up and catch up to him and pass him by to a certain degree when he's a little bit out of shape like he's gotten over time. He's still the guy that has, you know, that NFL top 10 type ceiling going for him, as does Trey Valentine, as does DeMarcus Christmas. They all do have that type of ceiling. Because they're unique, they have some unique defensive tackle qualities. The key part was getting, getting one of them into the class, and Florida State's done that so far. So maybe they might be able to land two, which would be absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, you look at the defensive. To me, it's all about you never turn down an elite corner, an elite defensive back, and you never turn down an elite defensive lineman. Because if you have those things, you're always going to be competitive. And it looks like they've got some names to potentially come out with several elite guys at both of those positions. And like you said, there's playing time to offer, particularly in the defensive backfield. And I think that for the defensive back recruits, one of the things that's got to be very appealing is that Pruitt has found ways to get guys on the field. Where he's putting his best guys out on the field. You know, if you can't crack the field as the corner or nickel corner, then he's going to stick you in as he showed with Ramsey. He'll stick you in at safety, and he'll make sure you're on the field as early as possible because he wants to get guys that can cover out there in his scheme, and that's got to be very, very appealing for some of these kids to see that not only are you going to have a chance to compete at your position, but if you don't make it at that position right away, then we'll move you over and then we'll do something with you like what we did with LaMarcus, where all of a sudden we'll move you into a more natural position once the guy in front of you happens to clear out or whatever. That's got to be very appealing. And watching how he's done that on the defensive line and with some of these guys like Christian Jones, again, that's something I think they're going to be able to market. But let's move forward and let's talk just briefly about this game coming up this weekend. I don't think either one of us expect this game to be especially close. The real question to me is not whether Miami can win this game. It's, is there any way that Miami keeps this game close? And you know, what do you see there? You're obviously closer to the Miami program on a lot of these things. What do you see coming up on this weekend?
Well, there's no way to actually look at the game talent-wise, depth-wise, experience-wise, statistically. I mean, Florida State is the better team. They are the more talented team. They are the deeper team. They have the better quarterback. They have the deeper receiving group. They have the deeper defense. I mean, all things point towards Florida State. I mean, you have to execute. You have to go out and make the plays. At the end of the day, football games are often decided by 10 to 12 plays. You have to win those 10 to 12 plays. Florida State's done that all year long. Miami really hasn't done that on the flip side. I mean, just as much positive for Florida State, there's enough negative with Miami, you know, that's making this 22-point spread, you know, pretty much 90% plus feeling that this is going to be a blowout on Saturday night. And the reason for that is simple. That's exactly the way, I mean, if you put the numbers into EA Sports college football system, you know, with given what's happened this year, Florida State's going to win this game by 25 points, at least. They're going to score 40-plus points. We'll see what Miami is able to score. That's really the big question in this game. It's not necessarily – Miami's not holding Florida State under – I mean, gosh, if they scored 35 points, I think it'd be a little disappointing for the Florida State side. That's a good calculation. Can Miami get even in the ballpark of that? Probably not. It would take Stephen Morris's, you know, best game of his college career. And really, they're going to be depending on Stacy Coley in this game, which is a freshman wide receiver. The loss of Phil Dorsett really hurts Miami. Let's face it, he's not a great wide receiver by any stretch of the imagination, but what he does well. He stretches the field. He's able to get behind the defense. He would at least be able to scare Florida State a little bit.
Yeah, and he's a guy that can run. He's a guy that can run one, you know, he can run three routes, but he runs three routes really well.
Yes, yeah, and you have to, if you don't cover him, he's going to run past you. Morris has the arm to hit the touchdown there, but he's out of this game. So what does Miami do? Well, they really have to play like UF. They have to figure out a way to get 10.5 yards on three plays while running the clock. And probably to do that, though, maybe lean on the tight ends, which they have a solid trio there to lean on a little bit in this game. If they're unable to do that, it likely will get ugly fairly early. There's no reason to believe Florida State's not going to come out hot, not going to come out ready to play, not going to come out ready to score. It's just a situation that Miami is in real trouble should that happen, which, you know, I expect to happen. The only thing that scares me in this game at all is the fact that it's universally Florida State's going to kill Miami. I don't feel like it's to the same degree as last year when Florida came to town, but there's some of that same feeling, you know, that Florida State's just gonna blow Miami out. Even Miami fans are saying it. And being a college football fan for as long as I have been, you know, that outcry of public support. But that's really, I mean, do the players believe that? Does it really affect anything? No. But it's just one of those situations that has played out a little bit over time across the country.
Yeah, I would think if that has any impact, it would have some impact on the psyche of Miami if they get down early in terms of they start to believe, okay, maybe they are this much better than us sort of thing. Where, you know, you hear all week, you know, and you know, they're going to definitely come out early. Miami's going to definitely come out early with a chip on their shoulder to show that they're not little brother in this relationship. You know, they're not the, they're not going to get the, get killed like they, like everybody's been saying. But you know, early on, you know, if you're Florida State and you come out early and you're able to, you know, land a couple punches early, you know, that's where suddenly, you know, you realize you are in the ring with Mike Tyson, and everybody was right that you are going to get knocked out. And that, you know, at that point, you're just trying to play, you know, trying not to get embarrassed. And I think that can change games pretty quickly. You know, so it does change the dynamic a little bit, where you don't want to come in and get blown out. You've got a chip on your shoulder. You want to prove it. But the first time that you get hit by the heavyweight, that's when it determines you have to go back and think about whether you actually agree with what you've been hearing the last week.
You're better with the thing. I believe it's 2010 when Florida State goes out to Norman to play Oklahoma, and they end up being a 9-4 type team in 2010, not quite ready for prime time, but, you know, certainly stepping in the right direction. I kind of feel like that's probably where Miami is right now, you know, as a program here in 2013. They're stepping in the right direction. You know, they're getting better. They're not ready to play a legit top three team, certainly not ready to play them on the road and compete, you know, evenly in that matchup. We'll see what happens. I mean, I think, am I right in my year there, Jason? Is it 2010?
It's 2010. Okay. It was Fisher's first year, and, you know, there was some optimism among people going out there because of Christian Ponder, how he had played in 2009 and all that. And then, you know, you got out there and they couldn't stop the offense. They couldn't stop Oklahoma's offense, and it became fairly clear fairly early that Oklahoma was going to roll in that game.
And we might see the exact same game play out here, because Miami should not stop Florida State in a similar fashion while still struggling. And it changes the game. Florida State gets up 17-0 here. Now Miami actually does have to press and try to make some things happen. And that's when Florida State's defense will make some things happen. And then all of a sudden, you know, this is 35-0 like NC State. That's how explosive Florida State is in the game. I mean, in general, I mean, Miami fans should be very happy that, you know, they're even in this game with this type of a limelight at this stage, you know, given all the things that have happened there. So, you know, it's not all negative for them, but certainly from the Miami perspective, if you can keep it within 17 to 24 points and look decent doing it, it's not a complete loss for you, believe it or not, in this game. You know, they can show something. I mean, Florida State, I mean, is this the game we see Carlos? Maybe, you know, it would be as good a time as any, to unleash him. It looks like Jimbo tried to a little bit last week, showed a little more flashes of him. He's somebody I would keep an eye on in this game. And, Miami has nobody who can match up with Kelvin Benjamin. Nobody. So if there's a breakout game waiting for him at some point, I would think this week would be this would be a good week to follow Kelvin. I think he could have a really big game.
So in concluding, what are you looking at as a possible score for this one? I think it's actually a tough score to project, because I think Miami's going to try to slow this game down and reduce the number of possessions in this game to try not to get blown out. You know, to try to put themselves in a position where, you know, Florida State maybe held to 40 points just because they don't have enough possessions, kind of thing. So I think it's a hard game to project, but, you know, what do you expect at the end of the day?
Well, I'm going to actually give two predictions today, based off two possible scenarios. Scenario one is Florida State just plays the way they're capable of playing. I think that's 47-17, 47-20, Florida State in that type of a game. If Miami is successful in slowing the game down, if somehow they figure a way to get Florida State off the field on third down at least a couple times, turn over here, turn over there, maybe it's as close as 35-24, Florida State winning. And that would be, quote unquote, an ugly game for Florida State. And basically, Miami would have played a similar game than they played the last 2 years against Florida State. Somehow uglied it up enough to keep themselves in the stadium the whole way through. I actually anticipate scenario one, Florida State coming out, scoring at will, being up 24-10, 27-10 at the half. and then comfortably extending, you know, in the second half and putting the game away.
Yeah, it sounds like we're in very much the same in the same mode. I'm not sure that if Florida State plays well that Miami scores even that many points, but I do think that that you know, essentially Al Golden has done a very good job there uglying a lot of games up to the place where that team can win some games, and they've stolen some games that they shouldn't, and they've been close against Florida State, or closer against Florida State in the last couple of years than they really should have been. Because they were able to basically drag them into the mud and really make it an ugly game. And that's something that, you know, I think the difference with this year is that you've got to win with Winston. You've got a guy that he resists being dragged into that mud. And, you know, the precision that he's been playing with, you wind up, you know, nope, you guys can go ahead and stay in the mud. I'm going to go ahead and stay up here and just keep throwing darts. And that changes things. So I'm expecting a little bit on the bigger side as well. But either way, Jeff, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon after the game.
I'm going to have one more comment, Jason, if you don't mind, okay?
Yeah.
I think you just hit the nail on the head on Winston, because I think if you give Florida State A.J. McCarron as a starting quarterback, a great college starting quarterback by all accounts in this game, there would be a lot more question marks, certainly in terms of the blowout victory and some of those type things, right, than there are today, knowing that Winston is Winston. you just can't even see it happening, you know, that he struggles and that the Florida State offense struggles. I mean, that's how good he is as a quarterback and how much he's shown in six games. It's really cannot be stated enough simply how great the kid is and how great he's going to be for the program.
Yeah, J-Boo's going to be J-Boo.
All right.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye-bye. All right.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Well, in wrapping up the show, to summarize, this is a huge recruiting weekend for Florida State. I think that this team has shown itself to be a very businesslike and mature team so far. Continues along the lines of what I was told after the Clemson game, that the leadership on this team, and not actually Jameis Winston, but particularly pointing to Telvin Smith and Rashad Greene and LaMarcus Joyner as the leaders on this team, that the leadership, those guys, those particular leaders would not allow this team to lose focus, that this team would maintain its focus as a result of the leadership and maturity of those particular players, combined with the confidence of Jameis Winston. I think we're seeing a very different Florida State team than we have in the past, and that is something that should come through to recruits and will matter when recruits get to see this team up close and personal. In terms of my own expectation for this Miami game, I agree with Jeff that there's sort of two possibilities here, and I would favor the possibility that I think Florida State does win this one by a good bit. The score that I'm thinking, I haven't given my final prediction on Noel Digest yet, but the score range that I'm looking at is probably something around 45 to 17 area, where, you know, I think ultimately Miami has some trouble scoring and trouble, you know, sustaining drives against the Florida State defense. It's gotten much better with its gap control. I think we'll see that this Florida State defense is better against the run at this point in the year than they have been, even when they're not in their 3-3-5 package. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm very much interested to see how Florida State schemes against Miami's bigger stuff. I think that's maybe the more interesting game within the game here. But to wrap the show, thanks again to Jeff Vogt for his analysis and his appearance here. On behalf of the rest of the Noel Digest staff, I'm Jason Staples. We'll talk to you again next week. I made this.